It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, weeds are a concern to many people, but certainly farmers. It's a matter of, you know, existence as to whether or not they're keeping weeds under control. And I think whether you're a consumer or a farmer, you may have been hearing about a controversy brewing in the state of Arkansas. It's about weed control, and it's gotten really boiled up into a pretty big issue of people that are very concerned about a certain herbicide that's being used. And I'm really happy to have kind of someone's right in the middle of that right now. He's with the Agricultural Extension Service in Arkansas, Bob Scott. Bob, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Bob, could you explain to us what is the this controversy that you're facing in Arkansas right now about using a certain herbicide, and it's got farmers against farmers, and it's got regulators, and it's got consumers, and it's got activist groups, and everybody's been paying attention to it. But let's define it, because I think I'm guilty, like everybody else, of just kind of assuming that all of this that we hear that's roiling down in Arkansas, that we think we got some idea about it, but I'm not sure I really do. So how do you describe this issue of concern that you face in Arkansas right now?
Well, the issue that we're having down here is with a product. The active ingredient is called dicamba. The brand name product that we're using in the state is Ingenia, which is actually a formulation of dicamba from BASF company. And this herbicide is an older herbicide that's been around for a long time. However, recently, Monsanto Company was able to breed, crops, both, soybean and cotton, that will tolerate the in-season use of dicamba herbicide.
So does that mean, excuse me, just a minute, but does that mean that they came up with a GMO seed that's genetically engineered so it's resistant to dicamba?
That's correct. The dicamba tolerance trait has been around for a long time, and they were able to insert this trait into their germplasm to come out with some pretty good cotton and soybean varieties that would enable you to use that product in crops over those crops.
So the resistant trait existed that you could have gotten at it with conventional breeding without doing genetic engineering?
Well, you're getting a little bit outside of my area of expertise, but it would be very difficult. It was a trait that was found not in soybeans and cotton. So, really, the most practical way of getting it into those crops was through the GMO process.
So, before they put it into the seed from genetic engineering, was the process that they would just spray dicamba on a field to control, I think in your case, is a pigweed that's the biggest issue for concern?
Well, dicamba was not being used for pigweed, you know, prior to the introduction of Xtend or dicamba-tolerant crops. I mean, dicamba has primarily in the past been used for pasture. It's a pasture herbicide. It's got a whole lot of uses. It's been used in corn and wheat for many years. It's also labeled in grain sorghum. It's got a lot of industrial uses. We actually used it a lot in the state of Arkansas to control another weed, which was glyphosate-resistant horseweed. And we started having a problem with that in our burn down applications, which are the herbicide applications that are typically made in the spring to clean up fields to get them ready for planting. Mm-hmm. And we had a herbicide, we had a weed called horseweed that became glyphosate resistant, and dicamba is very good on that. So we've been using dicamba in our burn down programs, which is, you know, normally go out very early in the spring for quite some time.
Gee, Bob, you're kind of on the frontier in all these controversies because, you know, there had been a lot of talk about how Roundup was no longer as effective as it was because weeds get used to anything, and that many areas had to start looking at something, or either they were using more Roundup than they did before, or they had to bring in another product. Is that kind of the way that dicamba followed? And I said Roundup, and Roundup, the active ingredient is glyphosate in Roundup. Is that kind of what you were alluding to on how dicamba started getting that, the use?
That's exactly what is driving the need for new technology in Arkansas. We started developing resistance to Palmer amaranth or Palmer pigweed around 2005, 2006. And this is a very aggressive weed. It's very prolific, produces a lot of seed. We've struggled with this weed for years. And prior to the introduction of Roundup Ready crops in the late 90s, we were in a similar situation to what we're in now, in that we had very few herbicides that were still effective on pigweed. It readily outcrosses with other pigweeds, and again, you know, a single pigweed, female pigweed plant can produce like a million seeds, so it's a very good candidate for developing resistance. It has all the characteristics that would lend itself to developing resistance to herbicides, and that's exactly what it had done. And you know, by around 2010, 2011, we were having very significant problems with glyphosate-resistant pigweed. And so to answer that, we switched over to a couple of other classes of chemistry. We started using Liberty Link crops, which are another GMO crop that are tolerant to the herbicide glufosinate. That's been pretty effective for us. And then we also used several herbicides from the PPO class of chemistry. A couple of examples of those trade names would be Valor and Flexstar. And we've rocked along pretty good with that program for a while. But unfortunately, you know, the pigweed seems to always find a way. And the last two or three years, we've seen an increase in the occurrence of PPO-resistant pigweed. So they were just becoming more and more difficult to control. So one answer to this problem that Monsanto came up with and provided was the extend crop concept, which, again, would enable us to use another mode of action, dicamba herbicide, for pigweed control. So we were, you know, growers were needing another option for weed control this year.
This new genetically engineered seed, especially for, you know, soybeans we're talking about in particular here, in addition to having dicamba resistance, is Roundup resistance in the seed as well?
Yeah, with the soybeans, they are also Roundup. It's stacked those beans have got a stacked trait. They're resistant to both glyphosate and dicamba. And then we also grow extend cotton, which will actually tolerate glyphosate, dicamba, as well as glufosinate, the active ingredient in Liberty. So in cotton, it's actually a three-way stack.
Now, Bob, the plant has to start growing, and the, you know, weeds are starting to come up or something. When you spray on top of a field, it doesn't matter if it gets on the plants now because they're resistant to it. Is that when you do it, when the plants are just getting started growing, or do you do it more than once in the course of the season before you harvest them?
Talking about dicamba, actually, that product can be used again. I mean, it can be used prior to planting, it does have some residual activity in the soil. It's not really known for its residual activity, but, you know, because the crops are dicamba tolerant, it can be used immediately prior to planting. Before that, we would have to wait a certain number of days after a rainfall in order to plant those crops, or you could get some injury. you know, because of the residual of the herbicide. But ideally, the timing for dicamba on pigweed, for example, is when they're somewhere around 1 to 2 inches tall. So it's a lot better to spray them when they're small than to let them get any size to them.
Now, here in California, they're starting to have some regulations against glyphosate and coming up with, like, safe levels. So glyphosate, again, is active ingredient in Roundup, is getting regulated because there's been some studies, mainly European, that are suggesting that it might be carcinogenic, although that's highly controversial. Has dicamba had similar concerns raised about dicamba as glyphosate?
Well, you know, dicamba is relatively new. It's a relatively new GMO trait, and so I don't think that the folks that are against GMOs have really had time to get motivated behind that cause. But it's not really a concern of anybody here that I talk to. I mean, primarily we're a heavy agricultural state. And, you know, dicamba, at least initially for us, was seen as a welcome option for control of this potentially devastating weed.
And I'm sure you have agencies that regulate, you know, how it's applied and when it's applied. And I suppose people have to wear protective gear or something when they're applying it.
Just like every other herbicide, I mean, we recommend that they read the label, and you know, the personal protective gear is right there on the label that they're supposed to use while they're applying this.
So now we get back to this dicamba. So we got this product out there. We got a lot of farmers have planted these soybeans. They've sprayed these genetically engineered soybeans that are dicamba resistant and Roundup and maybe something else too. And then that's where problems arise, hasn't it? What's been the issue with this application of this spray?
The primary issue that we've been dealing with, and unfortunately we are up to a very high number of complaints here in Arkansas. I think the last count was over 300, which is well over any other number that we've had in the past. We're not the only state that's having problems. I think surrounding states to Arkansas are also reporting some issues as well, but the issue is off-target movement, that is movement of the dicamba herbicide, which in our case is Ingenia, here in Arkansas, to non-dicamba tolerant soybeans. And the issue there is that non-dicamba tolerant soybeans are extremely sensitive to dicamba. So it doesn't take very much. In fact, you know, you could take such a small amount of dicamba that it cannot be detected by a laboratory, will actually cause damage on soybeans. So it's an understatement to say that soybeans are sensitive to dicamba.
Well, what about non-soybeans? What about, you know, corn or something or some other crop? Does it kill them?
Cotton. Yeah, cotton is fairly tolerant, actually, to dicamba. And like I mentioned earlier, corn and sorghum and wheat, this product is actually labeled for use on, so it's very safe around those. We also grow a lot of rice in Arkansas. Dicamba is not it's not labeled for rice, but it's not a problem around rice. Rice is not very sensitive to dicamba. So primarily in the row crop areas, it's just soybeans. Now, there have also been some reports of some horticultural crops such as melons, definitely sweet potatoes, and other vegetable type crops that they have also had some complaints about drift, you know, from those guys as well.
And I suppose an organic crop that's not supposed to show any sort of pesticide residues would be adversely affected.
Oh, yes.
So even if it doesn't kill them, I mean, it still is going to possibly show up on the product and be an issue.
That's correct. They would be susceptible to injury symptoms.
So now we've got this product out here, and it's been applied to soybeans that are resistant. but the soybeans that aren't resistant could be, you know, is a really serious issue. What's the percentage of soybeans that are resistant and the traditional maybe hybrid soybeans that aren't dicamba resistant?
That's been kind of a moving target to try to figure out, but we estimate that somewhere around 35 to 40% of our soybeans are Xtend beans or dicamba tolerant beans.
So you still got 2/3 are not this
correct
kind of GMO. So that's where the controversy is then, isn't it? I mean, so with that ability to drift over and kill your neighbor's soybeans that are wrong kind, if somebody gets hit by that, are they able to get compensation for the loss of their crop?
First of all, I think killing the soybeans is pretty strong language. Typically, what we see is injury. We see a little bit of what they call cupping and symptomology on the soybeans. And generally, especially if the soybeans are in the vegetative growth stage, what we generally see is a pretty full recovery, at least from moderate levels of drift. If you get enough on there, if you accidentally apply it to the wrong field, for example, you will kill them. But these low levels of drift basically just cause symptomology. And in general, earlier drift in like the vegetative stages will generally grow out of it. You may see a little bit of a delay in that crop as far as, the soybeans should be larger maybe than they are. But generally, we see pretty good recovery. We get a little more concerned about drift in the reproductive stages, which is kind of where we're getting at now with a lot of our soybeans here at the 1st of July. And at that stage, we can have damage to the soybean pods themselves, which can result in low test weight and some malformed pods and eventually lower yield. So we're a little more concerned about drift in the later stages of soybean development.
Well, I think you said earlier you got well over 200 that have already been affected or filed or complained and so forth. So it's something that you can't live with. So I would... Is the issue then to either require everybody to stop using it or, go back to the drawing board and come up with another product? What are the options for the future?
Well, that's definitely the issue at hand, is whether or not we're able to use this product successfully. Arkansas chose to put heavier restrictions actually on the application of dicamba than what was required by the federal label. In addition to that, they only labeled the newest, most proven low volatility formulation of dicamba that was available to them, which was Ingenia at the time. And so I feel like, from a regulatory standpoint, we were a very conservative state going into this year, requiring, we had a state requirement to be trained before this product was put out. So we tried to do everything we could to make this be successful. Again, it's a much needed technology by many of our growers that are running out of herbicide options. And so we feel like we did everything we could to try to make it work. And to be honest, I really personally don't know where this thing is going next year. I think there'll be a lot of debate at both the, not just our state, but all states that were impacted, as well as possibly even at the federal level about the future of this technology.
Well, in the meantime, as you might imagine, with a podcast called Farm to Table Talk, I have many listeners that would just say, well, why don't they just all go organic? So how do you, I'm sure it's not the first time you've heard that question. How do you answer that question?
I've heard it a lot. I think organic is great. I don't have anything against organic. I grow my own garden, and it's I'm mostly organic, but if you're a farmer and you're farming 5 or 10,000 acres of crops, it's a little bit impractical to think that person can hand weed or hand remove weeds from that many acres. It just is not sustainable from a production agricultural system. So it's great to buy organic if that's what you want. But unfortunately, is my belief anyways, and being someone who's involved in agriculture my whole life, that it's very difficult to feed the world that way.
Well, back when I was a kid and driving a tractor, I had to run a cultivator, which I hated, which is probably one of the reasons I'm not farming, because I could start daydreaming and then plow out rows of corn.
My dad wouldn't let me run a cultivator. I think that's why I became a weed scientist. I could never drive straight. And I love GPS auto steer.
Yeah, well, see, if we'd just been a little bit younger, we might have been able to stay out there, because they don't do cultivators like they used to, because they're using chemicals for cultivators more often. And even though even organic does have some pesticides that are approved. For
Correct.
Different reasons, yeah. They're on the approved list, and they're natural or non-synthetic, and none of those work enough for, say, soybean production to be able to make up for the loss of yields that they get.
Well, they work on certain weeds and in certain insects and things like that, but again, this particular pest that we have, Palmer amaranth, it's a particularly devastating one, and there's just virtually no way to farm without a good chemical weed control program for that weed.
Well, and you know, that's something else I've heard before too, is that different regions of the country have different issues, and to try to come up with a one size fits all, say, well, the nation ought to be doing this or this kind of production, because you're different in Arkansas than we are in California.
Correct.
And in fact, we're, as you know, we have a Mediterranean climate. So the fact is that oftentimes we get almost no rain from, you know, April until October, and that makes it easier. There's, you know, funguses you don't have to deal with, and a lot of other things. So it's maybe a little easier to go organic in many parts of California and some other states than it might be through the South and some of the Corn Belt too. Is that true? I mean, I just said that because I've heard it was true.
You know, I don't know about easier. I can't really say that anything we try to do organic is easier, but I will say this. We have a very diversified group of producers in Arkansas. We have folks that grow non-GMO. We have folks that grow organic, and most of those are for markets. You know, my attitude is if a farmer can get a premium for growing certified organic or certified GMO free or whatever, it should be their prerogative to do so. And that's one of the problems with the dicamba drift that we've had, is I believe that a guy ought to be able to grow whatever they want. I personally don't have a problem with GMOs. I think they're safe and of great benefit to agriculture, but if there's a consumer out there that would prefer to buy non-GMO, then I think they should have the ability to do that, and I think or should have the ability to fill that need, if that makes any sense.
Sure, I think it makes a lot of sense, and in the meantime, the battle against weeds goes on. They go on forever, don't they? And no matter what you do to try to get them under control for a while, they figure out a way to deal with that, and you got to come up with something new, apparently.
That's correct. Pigweed has been a difficult weed. We also have similar issues in other crops, and I wouldn't be doing my extension job if I didn't say that, you know, one of the big areas of education that we've been involved in lately, you know, we've been pushing very hard for our growers to adopt a diversified weed control approach. And this would include cultural practices. You mentioned cultivating earlier. Definitely hand hoeing and cultivating could be a part of that. We're also looking at cover crops as a way of suppressing weed growth in the spring, although that does involve herbicides to get rid of the cover crop when it's time for the money crop to be planted and grown. And then we're also looking into harvest weed seed destruction, which involves destroying weeds as they go, weed seed as it goes through the combine. So we're very actively looking at a lot of different ways that our growers can battle these weeds. And you know, one of those ways is to include a diversified herbicide program. And one of the things that's so difficult, and one of the reasons that we hate to lose a technology like dicamba-tolerant soybeans and cotton, is that that will be one less mode of action that we can use. And what we have found is if we apply three or four different modes of action of herbicides to a crop during that crop year, we can greatly reduce the likelihood of the development of resistance. Where we get into trouble is when we tend to use one herbicide over and over and over again, and we allow those populations to build up for individuals that can tolerate that herbicide.
So, Bob, it sounds to me like you're saying this is kind of a paradox, because in a way, having lots of tools which can include, you know, everything from cultivation to, you know, in several different kinds of products, you might actually be ending up using less overall, the cumulative.
Over time, we would hope so, yes.
Yeah.
But a lot of times economics gets in the way. It's more expensive to take a diversified approach. This is, after all, a business. These guys are in this to make money. And we try to get them to take the long view of, you know, preventing resistance. And a lot of growers do have diversified programs. Sometimes it doesn't matter if you have a very diversified approach on your farm, and then somehow you get a contaminated combine or maybe some seed that has some weed seed in it. You know, these things can spread from one farm to the other unintentionally. And so a lot of times it's not the individual grower's fault when they develop a resistance problem, because it can spread through equipment and things like that. So there's a lot of different ways these weeds find a way.
So, Bob, if there are interested, even farmers in other states, or consumers that want to understand the issue better, or people that are writing about the issue, do you have a site at the university or the Extension Service in Arkansas that has any fact sheets on this issue that people could find online?
Yes, they could go to our website, which is www.uaex.edu. And there's a really good search engine on that website with most of our fact sheets are available there, and you know, good information on resistance management and that sort of thing.
Well, I'll tell you, we really appreciate you taking the time to explain it. Sorry you're going through so much down in Arkansas right now, but maybe the rest of us can learn something about this journey that you guys are on. So wish you the best with it. And Bob Scott, I appreciate your being on Farm to Table Talk.
Okay, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on SoundCloud, Facebook, and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.